This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, The African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by Africa News Panorama. We shall close today's program with Millennium Appointment. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis on Monday received in audience the Brothers of Christian Instruction of Ploemel, also known as the Lamene Brothers, on the occasion of their general chapter. In his address, the Pope urged them to be fathers who reflect the loving and compassionate face of God. He also appealed to the brothers to help children affected by war to regain the ability to smile. Christopher Wells reports.
Highlighting their charism of the evangelization of children and young people through education, Pope Francis encouraged the Lamene brothers to be fathers to those to whom you are sent.
Vi esorto pertanto a essere padri per coloro a cui siete inviati.
Fathers who reflect the loving and compassionate face of God. The 200th anniversary of their foundation, celebrated in 2019, is an occasion to return to the fundamental insights of their founders, the Pope said. Today their work is present in several countries of the world, he explained, because they believe that everything is possible for those who entrust themselves totally to the Lord and put themselves at the service of the integral human development of each person. The Pope noted their vocation to go where others do not go, to the peripheries, and urged them to be a source of hope to those suffering from war, indifference, and the culture of waste. These people, too, have dreams, the Pope emphasized.
Quei bambini, quei giovani, quelle persone hanno anch'essi dei sogni.
But dreams that are often shattered. May you help them to revive their dreams, to believe in them, and to realize them, he said. Pope Francis said he counts on the brothers' filial trust and attachment to the ministry of the Pope, and he called on them to collaborate in the dioceses in which they are carrying out their missions. At the same time, he warned them to avoid any spirit of pride, closure, division, or gossip. Finally, he invited the brothers, at the end of their general chapter, to renew the consecration of their institute to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, praying that she might help them to cultivate the zeal to set out to serve, and to cultivate humility, trust in God, and the joy of being servants of His tenderness and mercy. I'm Christopher Wells.
Pope Francis sent out a post on X, formerly Twitter, on Monday to mark the 22nd April World Earth Day, also known as International Mother Earth Day. The Pope in his tweet said, "We are all called to become artisans and caretakers of our common home, the Earth, which is falling into ruin." Lisa Zangarini has this report.
In his post on X, Pope Francis noted that our industrial and consumerist societies in which the present generation has thrived have done little to protect the planet, remarking the close connection between the current environmental crisis and the conflicts raging throughout the world. Our generation has bequeathed many riches, but we have failed to protect the planet, and we are not safeguarding peace, he said. Hence his urgent call to become artisans and caretakers of our common home, the Earth, which the Pope noted is falling into ruin. Each year, Earth Day has a specific theme to draw global attention on pressing environmental issues. Under the banner Planet versus Plastics, this 54th edition is focused on plastic pollution and on the urgent need to reduce its use and production. Beyond its environmental implications, the proliferation of plastics poses a significant threat to human health, akin to the challenges posed by climate change. As plastics degrade into microplastics, they release toxic chemicals into ecosystems, contaminating food and water sources. This year's campaign therefore prioritizes spreading awareness about the detrimental effects of plastic on human and environmental health. The immediate aim of the campaign is to swiftly eliminate single-use plastics by 2030 and to embed the commitment within the United Nations Treaty on Plastic Pollution by 2024. In the long term, the campaign aims to obtain a 60% reduction in plastic production by 2040. To this end, the campaign also emphasizes the importance of investing in innovative technologies and materials to pave the way for a plastic-free world. I am Lisa Zengarini.
The bishops of Tanzania recently launched a new book containing rites for the celebration of Ash Wednesday and Holy Week liturgies in the absence of a priest. Selina Maige sent us this report from Dar es Salaam.
On 18th March this year, 2024, on the eve of consecration and installation of His Excellency Bishop Vincent Cosmas Mwagala, the new bishop of a new diocese of Mafinga, the Tanzania Episcopal Conference launched a new book. This book contains the rites for the celebrations of Ash Wednesday and the Holy Week without the presence of the priest. This rite fills the pastoral need, whereby due to the presence of many outstations and the lack of enough priests, non-ordained ministers can now lead the liturgy on the mentioned days. Speaking to Vatican News, the auxiliary bishop-elect of the Archdiocese of Umbea, His Lordship Godfrey Jackson Mwasekaga, said,
"The book is very useful because there are some parishes who have 20 outstations. So the whole week, the fathers or the priests will go only to the 3 outstations. The other 17s, the other 10s, no celebration. To let the Catholics active, because they used to stay there waiting a priest. So the book has come at the right time. I appreciate what they have done at the Episcopal Conference."
Meanwhile, Reverend Dr. Clement Kihio, the Executive Secretary of the Liturgy Department of Tanzania Episcopal Conference, said this book will be used by the diacons, catechists, and other lay faithful who will be authorized to lead the liturgy of the days mentioned in the rite. Father Dr. Clement Kihio also urged the priests, especially the parish priest, to instruct those who will use the rite so that they may use it correctly as it is directed.
"As you know, the book does not belong to a single diocese. It belongs to the Tanzanian Episcopal Conference. It is a call for all priests to know the right and to direct their faithful, especially those who are entrusted to lead or to assist in these days which have been mentioned in this book. It is a wide range. When I say those who are not priests, it means we have the deacons can use it, the catechists can use it, and any other lay person who has been entrusted to celebrate or to lead the celebration in these days can use it."
And Reverend Father Johnny Mungoni of the Archdiocese of Tabora also commented that the book has been issued at the right time, as it will help the faithful to pray well on the Holy Week with good guidance without the presence of priests.
"Well, my comment is that this book is very helpful in the outstations, because came timely, we will continue to teach our catechists how to use it, and the faithful are happy thanks to the Episcopal Conference and the liturgical commission, which they have done this. Thank you very much."
In Dar es Salaam, Selina Maige, Vatican News, Tanzania.
You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
I'm Father Paul Samasumo. A boat carrying mostly people going for a funeral in Banjul, Central African Republic, has capsized, killing 58 persons. The overcrowded boat was carrying 300 people on board. The disaster happened on the Mpoko River, which is near Banjri. Authorities said the death toll could be higher, as there were no exact lists for persons who were on board. In South Africa, the High Court in the city of Durban has dismissed ANC's latest attempt to block former President Jacob Zuma from using the name Umkhonto Wesizwe. The ANC argued that the name Umkhonto Wesizwe is a trademark and an intellectual property of the ANC. Umkhonto Wesizwe is a newly formed political party of Jacob Zuma. The party has emerged as a strong rival to the ANC ahead of elections next month. Umkhonto Wesizwe is especially strong in the KwaZulu-Natal province of South Africa. Reports say Namibia has discovered an estimated 10 billion barrels of oil off the Namibian coast. The Portuguese exploring company Galp Energia said it was particularly excited about the potential find. The discovery has positioned the Southern African country as a potential significant player in the global oil industry. Six Nigerian soldiers have been killed in an ambush in central Nigeria, where the army is fighting criminal gangs. This is according to a statement from the Nigerian military. Northwest and central Nigeria have for years been plagued by gangs and criminals known as bandits. They raid villages, kill and abduct residents for ransom. They take away livestock and burn crops and homes. Though driven by financial gain, there are now concerns among officials and analysts about the bandits' connections which have been cultivated with jihadist groups that are waging a 15-year insurgency in northeast Nigeria. The UK's Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, pledged on Monday that the country's first deportation flights to Rwanda could leave for Kigali in the next 10 to 12 weeks. There has been a prolonged standoff over the law between the two houses of parliament over the past 4 months. The legislation, which conservatives hope will endear them to the voting public, was expected to be approved by late Monday this week. Alexander Mutiso Munyau over the weekend delivered another win for Kenya on a day the London Marathon honored last year's champion Kelvin Kiptum. This weekend's race started with applause for Kelvin Kiptum, who was killed in a car crash in Kenya on 11 February this year. Kiptum was Kenya's long-distance runner who currently holds the marathon world record. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. The Miserere Dialogue and Partnership Service of the Catholic Church in Nigeria has launched a new book titled Stories of Pain and Hope in Response to the Prevailing Social Unrest, Displacement and Refugee Crisis, Gender-Based Violence and Childhood Trauma, among other challenges in Nigeria. The book launch took place on the 17th of April at the Catholic Secretariat of Nigeria in Abuja. Delphine Asu has this report.
Nigeria has witnessed her share of traumatic events, ranging from poor governance, economic downturn, to regular killings and kidnappings. The book, Stories of Pain and Hope, seeks a better approach to trauma in the society. Julia Crocha, who is the head, Miserere Dialogue and Partnership Service, in her press release, highlighted the community approach to trauma-sensitive work.
This publication takes a community-based approach to provide examples of wounded hearts, how to recognize a wounded heart, and how we can heal together. Trauma-sensitive work requires a holistic and multidisciplinary approach that addresses the complex interplay of individual, interpersonal, community, and structural factors that contributes to trauma. prioritizing trauma-informed perspectives, practices, and interventions, organizations can better support the recovery, resilience, and well-being of individuals and communities affected by trauma.
She also charged the authorities to end the harsh realities in the nation that contributes to trauma.
It was mentioned today, especially security issues, because of the kidnapping, the terrorism in the country. It will cause a lot of trauma, it will cause a lot of pain in individuals. So it's important as for the government to address security, to handle the situation so people can safe be moving around and safe in their homes. And also gender-based violence and domestic violence is a very important issue to address, because not just the big issues like terrorism or kidnapping is there. There's also in the homes, there need to be peace at home so that individuals can also heal the communities and the nation.
While analyzing the book, Very Reverend Father Zakaria Samjumi, the Secretary General of the Catholic Secretariat of Nigeria, spoke on the relevance of the content of the book in the society.
Anywhere it is told, it will somehow unearth other stories, those hidden experiences of others. And secondly, it is also good to know that majority of our people don't even understand that they are traumatized, that they are going through so many things. They don't understand it. But if they see something like this, then it begins to make sense that, okay, so this is what is happening, then help can be given. So I think that this book should be able to reach policymakers, our community leaders, to see how we can together heal not only individuals, but communities at large.
One of the guests, Salamatu Garba, who represented the Director of Gender Affairs, Bolusfria Kinde, called for collaborative effort towards helping victims of trauma in our society.
Please, let's have a way of supporting each other. Let us not rejoice in the problems of others. Please, gender-based violence is all our responsibility as a community leaders, as spiritual leaders. That is why government cannot do it alone. That's why government work with community leaders. Community leaders are involved because these things happen in our communities.
In Abuja, Nigeria, Delphine Asu reporting.
In South Africa, the Migrants and Refugee Office of the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference, the SACBC, recently held a three-day conference for pastoral care coordinators to share reports on the response to the plight of migration in their respective dioceses. The meeting was also called to help the coordinators familiarize themselves with South Africa's white paper on international migration. Our colleague Sheila Furish tells us more.
From April 10th to 12th, bishops and pastoral care coordinators from Botswana, Eswatini, South Africa and Lesotho met at Lumko Institute and Conference Center for a three-day conference on migration. Speaking to Vatican News, the SACBC Liaison Bishop for Migrants and Refugees, Bishop Joseph Mary Kizito, says the conference allowed pastoral care coordinators to share reports on the response to the plight of migration in their respective dioceses and also to familiarize themselves with South Africa's white paper on international migration.
The government has asked us to give an input, and today the center of the Shema, the Scabrinian people, they came to give us those recommendations, and those recommendations have been accepted by the government to see how best migrants and refugees could be tackled. In those recommendations, we focused on the value of humanity, on the human dignity, not on money, not on politics, but on the human dignity and on the church teachings. So we wanted to see that how can we bring the gospel values and the theology, the church teaching into the white paper, which is going to really affect a lot of migrants and refugees if the government is going to work on it. We also took time to look at the directorate. We have asked the SIDARA, which is one of the theological institutions, a seminary run by the religious people in KwaZulu-Natal to really look at the directorate where people can find services, who does what and where. For example, where can somebody find a shelter? Where could somebody find a department organization, NGOs, church organization? Who can help somebody in need? So we are going to have another comprehensive directorate so that people can know where to find help as a church.
And our thanks there to Sheila Pirish in Pretoria, South Africa.
You are welcome to this week's edition of Millennium Appointment. As you heard on this program, concerns are being voiced by humanitarian agencies and by reporters on the ground about a looming famine in Sudan, which will affect millions of people who have been uprooted by the ongoing fighting and those resident in areas where fighting has not yet reached. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, has sent the director of its Department for Emergencies and Resilience, Ryan Paulsen, and his team to parts of the country where fighting is not taking place to assess the situation and to determine how the ordinary people there are coping and how they can be helped to avert the famine. Mr. Paulsen told reporters from the city of Port Sudan, where he is stationed, that the ongoing fighting in Sudan between the National Army and the paramilitary rapid support forces had contributed much to the looming famine.
I had a chance this week to visit with some farming communities that FAO has been supporting last year. On this mission, I've been able to come to Port Sudan and to move to some areas in Red Sea State. So it's a particular part of the country, but there are people in urgent need of assistance across the country as a whole, and we've met with some of them that we've already been supporting here, and there are a series of challenges that they're facing, but also opportunities that are ahead of them, and the challenges are multiple, and the families that we met with were describing a situation where, in addition to everything that's happening in various parts of the country around conflict, and we do know that conflict is the main driver of the crisis. That wasn't the case with the families that we met. They also face challenges when it comes to climate dynamics and challenges. We were in fields looking at crops that have been harvested, but we were also looking at earth dams that have been washed away earlier this year as a result of flooding in the past. And so there's a precarious reality for vulnerable farming households that needs attention. I think it's really important to understand that the situation of those in acute food insecurity is nuanced and different by specific location and locality. But for me, the main takeaway from the engagement with these communities was that I saw production taking place. We saw ripe tomatoes being harvested and ready for harvest and going into local markets. Again, a reminder that it's possible to do impactful, life-changing, life-saving work, even in challenging environments.
Sudan is very fertile. And like you said, there's a lot of potential there for food production. But obviously, there are reasons preventing farmers from reaching their lands. Can you give us some of those main reasons?
If we look particularly at the situation over this last year, conflict is clearly the main driver when it comes to the current hunger crisis and food insecurity. 9 out of 10 people facing emergency food insecurity are in the conflict hotspots in Darfur, in the Kordofan region, in the Khartoum area, and recently also in Al Jazeera State. And Al Jazeera State, of course, is often described as the breadbasket in terms of production nationally. And so the situation in those contexts is obviously of real concern to us. We've also very concerningly heard and do hear reports from farmers about inability to access their plots of land. And so, you know, for us as a specialized technical agency, it's not just about giving inputs to farmers. We also provide technical assistance, but they obviously need access to their land to prepare it. They need access to the land to plant. They need access to the land to monitor and surveil the crops, and then access to land to be able to harvest for those that are cropping too. And so this issue of being able to access farming land is key and a major priority and concern.
You spoke earlier about agricultural support to mitigate the food insecurity crisis. Can this still be effective even as the conflict rages on?
We've been able to demonstrate as FAO that it's possible to deliver at-scale support even in very challenging circumstances. Just last year, and since fighting broke out, FAO supported more than 5 million Sudanese people with emergency agricultural assistance. We provided to more than 1 million farming households a total of more than 10,000 metric tons of key seeds, including sorghum and millet, as well as okra. And we did that across 15 states. It was only in West Darfur and Central Darfur that we had challenges last year in terms of delivery. So it's possible to deliver at scale. And in terms of access, it's possible to work. Obviously, the situation is very dynamic, and we do hope and request and continue to work with all of the actors and stakeholders and recognize, I should say, the role and the support that's been provided by the Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in terms of helping to facilitate and negotiate access last year as part of our distribution program. So this year, our plan is to support more than 10 million Sudanese people with emergency agricultural assistance, 10.1 million. The plans are ambitious, but fully justified in line with the evolving situation.
Ryan Paulsen, the director of the Office of Emergencies and Resilience of the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, speaking there to Ezati Eriferi of the United Nations News from the city of Port Sudan. I am Johnny Baptist Tomosime.
You have been listening to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Justice and Peace. I am Festus Tarawali, and do join us then. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.